Blog Talk Radio. And I'm your host, Merle Exit. Well, it's 8 p.m. here in New York City where I'm doing this show. And it's a nice day out. Yep. Summer weather, springish, I guess, kind of. The sun was shining. Oh, of course, it's the evening now, so the sun ain't shining. But that's okay. I recently came back from California. Again, you say? Well, this time, you did say that. I heard you say that. Well, this time, and I did take Esther and Eunice with me. Don't worry about it. And this time I went to Mendocino County, which was like northwest of Sacramento. I went to Mendocino County in the towns of Ukiah, which is the Upper Russian River area. And then I went to Point Arena in the South Coast area. Then off to Santa Rosa. And then eventually to Yolo County. But we're not covering all of it, just a couple of the places. So tonight, we're first going to be going to the city of 10,000 Buddhas, which is, it's in the town of Ukiah, but it's kind of outside. You consider Ukiah, but I think they consider it like salvage. And we're going to have Terry Nicholson. I'm going to call her, and she's going to talk to us about the 10,000 Buddhas. Then we're going to go over the Super 8 Motel. Why a Super 8 Motel? Well, it's gone green, and we're going to talk to Rakesh all about that. Then we're also going to Safari West in Santa Rosa. Yeah, that's, you'll hear what it's all about. And then finally, one of the restaurants that I went to was Branch's Woodfire Chop House. And, we're going to get this is all pre-taped, and we're going to talk about the base of the food that I had and what the place is all about. So, but the first thing we're going to do is let's get a hold of Terry Nicholson. Let's see, we got here. We are dialing.
Hello.
Hi, Terry. It's Merle Exit.
Hi.
You're on the air now.
Okay.
Well, so let's us. I didn't really introduce the whole place, but give us. Oh, first, tell us who you are, like why you're sharing this with us. Versus anybody else, and then tell us all about the place.
Okay, my name is Terry Nicholson, and I have been a member of the community at the City of 10,000 Buddhas just east of Ukiah in Northern California since the late 1970s.
Wow.
Go ahead.
No, that's a long time.
Oh, I thought you had a question. So originally the property was a state mental hospital, and it was closed by Governor Reagan in the late 60s because of budget cuts, which we're all familiar with. And it was bought by a grape corporation called Vinifera, and they mainly wanted the surrounding land that went with the state hospital. So they sold a little bit of the land and all the buildings to the Buddhist Association, Dharma Realm Buddhist Association. And it's an international Buddhist community. The founder of the City of 10,000 Buddhas was from northern Manchuria and also came to the United States in the late 60s and began teaching mainly Westerners, but also had some disciples from Hong Kong and China. And he was living in San Francisco, and they had a monastery in the Mission District before that. So the community moved to Talmadge in, purchased the property in 1976.
Oh, it's Talmadge? That's a town?
Talmadge is a little town. It's a post office, basically.
Okay.
And it's about 3 miles east of Ukiah, 3 to 5 miles.
Okay.
Started as a pretty small community, about 50 people. It's grown to several hundred people, more than that for special activities. And along with being an Orthodox Buddhist monastery, it trains monks and nuns from all over the world. It also has schools, elementary school up through college. And the elementary school is all-day students, and about half the students are children of people who live at the City of 10,000 Buddhas. About half come from the surrounding area. And the junior high and high school also have boarding students, so it's a very international school. It has students from all over, mainly Asia, but from other places as well. And the university offers several degrees. It's in the high school already is accredited, and the university is in the process of doing WASC accreditation. WASC is the Western Association of Schools and Colleges that oversees high schools and universities.
Now, let me ask you a question. So, in other words, people who are choosing to get their schooling there would be choosing it just as somebody would be choosing, like, going to, like, Catholic school or a yeshiva. Is that the kind of thing?
Similar to that.
Right.
There's absolutely no requirement to be a Buddhist.
Mm-hmm.
Ethics are very much a strong part of the school. There is a little bit of Buddhism taught. There's a religions class taught in the high school. So the kids learn a little bit about Buddhism, but they learn about other religions. The thing that's stressed is the morality and ethics. It's pretty much a bilingual school. Mandarin Chinese is taught starting in kindergarten. So that's another reason some people send their kids, so that they can learn another language. The classes are small. Academic standards are quite high. So those are other reasons that people send their kids. It's a safe environment. In accord with traditional Asian schooling, the boys and girls are schooled separately. So that is also a plus for a lot of people. And a lot of local kids will go to the school through, say, eighth grade, and then go to the local high school if they're interested in having more of a co-ed experience and social life, that kind of thing.
So in other words, through eighth grade, it's separated, boys and girls?
It's separated all the way through, but I'm saying
a lot of
kids who go to school there, you know, by high school, they want to be in a co-ed situation, so then they would go to the public schools. But there are, you know, there's quite a few kids who choose to stay there, and there's many advantages of having the sexes separated in terms of focus and ability to be yourself and be more relaxed. And most of the kids, when they're finished, say that it was a positive experience for them.
Now, I'm quite curious in terms of what's taught. Are there separate things taught male, female? In other words, in terms of what one's role should be as a female male?
No, it's the same curriculum. I mean, there are some differences. The girls' school has more, you know, kind of dance classes and that kind of crafts and that kind of thing, and the boys probably are a little stronger in sports, but as far as academics, no, there's no difference at all.
Well, I don't mean academics necessarily. So when,
or
in other words,
even,
like...
No, there's no separation of deciding, you know, girls should do one thing and boys another. They're...
Well, and in regards to sports, is they have separate like girls teams and boys teams or things?
Yes, they do.
So they don't ever play co-ed necessarily in terms of sports.
No.
Okay.
They occasionally, you know, because there's a university there,
mm-hmm.
they occasionally will both boys and girls will be part of a university class.
Right.
So that does happen, usually not till high school.
Is there any particular sport? I'm just kind of curious. Is there any like the sports that the girls play or the boys play that are different?
Basketball and soccer seem to be the most popular Western sports. The girls do traditional Chinese dancing, and the boys do a traditional lion dance, the Chinese
mm-hmm.
lion dance. They train in that, and they do a dragon dance also.
Okay.
There's also a Chinese orchestra. There's both a girls orchestra and a boys orchestra, and they do sometimes play numbers together.
Okay. Well, that's kind of cool. And, you know, kind of describe, so how many like, buildings other than in terms of not the housing. Can you describe some of the buildings, the non-housing or teaching buildings?
Yeah. Both boys and girls schools both have two buildings, so there's four altogether. There's an elementary and a high school.
Mm-hmm.
The university has several buildings and a library. And then there's there's a convent and a monastery. So that and that includes in it place to meditate and hold ceremonies. And then there's a main building. I don't know if you were in that when it was the state hospital. It was a gymnasium, but it's been converted into the main Buddha hall. It has 10,000 Buddhas in it. And they were all made by the founder. He made them himself.
I did go into one place. I think it was the dining room, dining hall.
The main dining hall. Yeah, there's
main
a
dining
hall that holds about 1,500 people. There's two smaller dining halls where sometimes, like, the students have breakfast lunches together with everyone. The monks and nuns only eat that one meal.
Right.
But the students eat three meals, so they sometimes have the breakfast and dinner in a smaller hall.
Okay. And I understand there's also a restaurant, but I missed that.
Yeah, and there's a restaurant, and there is a wood shop. There's an art gallery, a small stage for performances, and several lecture halls.
Hmm.
What else? There's a masonry shop also. Those are the main things. And then there's quite a bit of housing. And there is also a small clinic, medical clinic.
Oh, okay. Now, I'm curious in terms of other than, you know, being taught in a calm sense, is there a monetary advantage to somebody attending the school? I mean, like, and when I say monetary advantage, different from a private school. In other words, if you're going to public school, you're not expected to pay for public school.
Yeah, it's probably less expensive than most private schools.
Oh, okay.
There are scholarships available.
What made you get into this? You don't sound Chinese. Are you?
I actually grew up Jewish. My grandfather was a rabbi.
Oy vey.
And a practicing pediatrician. So I was a religious studies major in college, and have always been interested in other religions. And so I came out to my parents moved to California, and I came a year or two later. And my older brother was already studying with the Venerable Master at the monastery in the Mission District, and I got interested. And then I went back and finished college, and I got a teaching credential, so I was involved in starting the schools. So, and I like the idea of living out in the country and in a small community that everybody supported each other. So it was kind of that time, you know, it was early 70s, late 60s, early 70s, everybody was trying experimental communities. So, but most of all, once I met the Venerable Master, I really wanted to study Buddhism and learn everything I could from him. So that was my main motivation.
And what do you think you got out of it, different from, let's say, the outside world, if you want to speak, if you want to kind of say that?
Well, I think I have a very strong center of, you know, clear idea of, I want to say ethics, but also a broader sense of the world that, you know, sort of the being a Buddhist, I think, opened my heart to more than just a small group of people. And the Buddhist teachings, which are quite they don't really conflict with any other religion, and that's part of what I like about it. It doesn't say that other religions are wrong, but it has a very vast mind-opening, I guess, quality about it. And so I think living there, I've learned to be a much more open person, open to new ideas and other cultures, and much more compassionate. And I think living there also taught me to be able to live simply and not to need lots of things. Not so I missed out on the acquisitiveness of our society. For at least I'm not living there at the moment. I live a couple miles away. But yeah, it's a very simple lifestyle, but very supportive. It's a great place to bring up children. Very safe and nurturing. And I think the sense of community is very strong. Living in a place like that where everybody helps each other out and everybody knows each other. And we're all
now,
working pretty much towards the same goals.
Would you say that it's modern or not modern? When I say modern, I mean, do people there, you know, all have their computers and all that other stuff, or they said nope?
Well, you know, people do have computers. There's no television. I mean, the kids watch movies occasionally, but they don't watch TV. The students in the schools can't have, you know, computer games and cell phones and all that kind of thing. I mean, they can have one, but they have to keep it in the office and only use it to call parents, that kind of thing. So the kids are unplugged, I think, much more than regular society. But certainly, you know, computers are a part. One of the major activities there is translating the Buddhist scriptures into English and other languages. So computers are pretty helpful with that. In terms of worldwide communication, it's pretty helpful also. But for example, if you were to come into a retreat and do a meditation session, there would be absolutely none of that. So you would leave your cell phone and your computer and all of that in your room, at least. But and personally, I feel like people communicate a lot better without them. I think we become pretty dependent on these other things. And direct communication happens less and less.
Oh yeah. Oh no, I definitely agree. It's like, you know, everybody was yelling at me, I need to get a cell phone. Well, yeah, I have a cell phone. It basically and everybody will also say, Merle, don't you leave your cell phone on? I go, no, I use it, absolutely. The two things I use it for. I'm shopping with somebody. I call them. I'm saying, I'm done.
Uh-huh. Yeah, I'm pretty
the second
much
thing,
the same
way. The second reason, I'm at the airport, and I'm calling the taxi service to pick me
right.
up.
They're very few
Those
cell
are
phones it. These days, so you don't have much choice. But I do think, you know, I know my own children growing up there. I mean, they both
uh-huh.
love television now. I mean, they live in the world.
But right.
growing up there, I think they were outside a lot more. They did a lot more creative play. They interacted with each other in, you know, made up plays, had games, fantasies. They had a very rich kind of fantasy life and community of their own as children that I think sometimes kids lose out on when it's just them and the computer.
Oh,
and
yeah.
I also think they learn skills of interacting with each other and conflict resolution and all those kinds of things that kids need to learn to get along in the world. And I think sometimes our electronics get in the way of all that problem solving that we all learned running around in the neighborhood and playing games and climbing trees and all of that.
Now, what is the experience of, let's say I went there for a retreat, what would
mm-hmm.
that encompass?
Well, there's several different kinds. I would say there's three main kinds. There's one that is almost entirely meditation. It's called, the Chinese word for Zen is Chan, so we call it a Chan session, and basically starts at 2:30 in the morning and goes till midnight, and you sit for an hour, walk for half an hour, sit for an hour, walk for half an hour. There's a break for lunch. There's a break for instructional talk, and I think there's an hour or two in the afternoon when you can go take a nap if you want, and an evening talk, and that's all you would do for a week. That's one kind. Another kind is what we call a recitation session where you would recite the name of a Buddha or Bodhisattva, and there's more ceremony to that. They recite some of the Buddhist scriptures, and they chant the Buddha's name or a Bodhisattva's name, and they alternate that with sitting and reciting and then silent meditation. The meditation is shorter. So that's the second time in kind. And the third kind, they just finish every spring. They vow something called the 10,000 Buddha Repentance and on behalf of world peace. So that's done every spring. It takes about 3 weeks, and they bow to over 10,000 Buddhas, chanting their names and bowing. And there's a tune that goes along with it. So I would say those are the three main sessions. There's also longer sessions, like in the summer. There'll be a summer study session, so there'd be classes also. And then sometimes for the weekend, students come from colleges and just participate in the whole monastic schedule and have, you know, panel discussion and question and answer sessions. And that happens with some of the local colleges up with Humboldt State, and Eureka comes down. And sometimes students from Berkeley come up for those kind of shorter sessions.
Now, what about the if not knowing Mandarin, does it?
Oh, everything's translated.
Okay.
So, and a lot of the classes are English only. Some of the classes are Chinese only, but all of the lectures are translated in English into English and sometimes into Vietnamese also.
Well, I was there just to make you can kind of explain what was going on. I was there. Apparently, because of timing wise, I missed the actual celebration.
Mm-hmm.
And I understand it had to do with was it a monk or Buddha monk from Vietnam?
Were you there for
was
the
that?
Memorial ceremony? Was that it?
It was a week ago Sunday.
A week ago
Sunday, and it was a memorial. Yes.
Yeah, that was the founder. It was the anniversary of his passing.
Mm-hmm.
And that happens every June. So that was just a disciples from all over come to pay their respects.
Okay, because what I had gotten, when I stopped up front afterwards, because I said, is everybody who goes here, are they all Chinese? And the guy said to me, oh, all these people are from Vietnam, having to do with, the boat people or something, and that's
mm-hmm.
why they were there to honor.
At one point, we had a refugee resettlement program, and we trained. And yeah, so a lot of people came then. But there are a lot of Vietnamese from the Bay Area, Los Angeles area, who come to the temple here. Chinese, there's, but there are also Western disciples.
Mm-hmm. So I also had noticed, the reason I was asking is because there was an area where there were a lot of, books and music,
mm-hmm.
For people to take and,
a lot of it was in another language.
Yes, and I went, because I kind of looked around, and I was with two of my friends, and I said, we're the only Westerners that are here, I think, for the day. Except I think I saw one woman. I wonder if it was you.
I don't think I was there that day.
Oh, okay.
But, no, there are, actually, at one point when I was living there, we were the only family that wasn't Asian, but
mm-hmm.
it's pendulum has swung back. When I first came, it was all Westerners, and there were only a handful of Asians, and then it became more and more Asian, and now I think we're swinging back the other direction, more toward the middle again. There's a lot more Westerners. Also, a few families from South America. There's
mm-hmm.
a spattering of people from all over.
I guess there are enough Westerners that said, I had enough with all this other stuff and I need to calm down and relax and kind of thing.
Well, there's a small number of lay people who are, who stay around for most of their lives. There's a larger number of people who will come with their family for a few years, kind of like a pilgrimage or just to donate their time for a while and then they move on. So, there's a mixture. And then, of course, there's the monks and the nuns. And even they move between different monasteries. We have, the Buddhist Association has monasteries in other countries, and Southern California and the Bay Area. So the monks and nuns also move around. There's a,
mm-hmm.
there's a temple in Australia and Hong Kong and Taiwan, Malaysia. So people move around a lot.
If somebody is staying there, I'm sure the accommodations are simple, but what would one expect?
Very simple. A bed and a dresser and probably a shared bathroom.
Mm-hmm.
Well,
kind of like the Y, I guess.
Yeah, very simple. And the
but
rules
cleaner,
are,
maybe.
And if you are going to stay there while you're there, you can't eat meat or drink alcohol or take drugs, and, basic.
Oh, it's all right. It's strictly vegetarian, but not vegan necessarily, right?
Pretty much the meals there are vegan. I think the kids drink milk, or it's available to them, so it's soy milk. But
food was great. Whatever I was eating was good.
Completely vegan, and most of the food is vegan, but there's no regulation against milk products. They don't eat eggs.
Oh, interesting. I don't know that I could. That would be interesting for me to try to deal with,
uh-huh.
Well, milk I don't think I,
Well,
and
I told my grandmother I was keeping kosher.
This is true. There's nothing there you can eat that's non-kosher.
That's right.
And I have to tell you, it's really funny when I explain to people who have no idea what people come up. If you're from New York City, there are certain things Jewish is you know, there's a lot of Yiddish and Jewish. I mean, people know a lot of stuff. You go outside New York City, and amazing how people have no sense of what is so, to me, is so common. But like I don't know why. I guess I assume California people would know. But there was somebody, like someone says that they thought that kosher means it's blessed by a rabbi. And I really had to go through an entire explanation about the food. And why.
That's interesting because I've been writing a children's book and I've been talking based on some experiences from my childhood. And I'm having to explain in the book about kosher.
That's funny. And I explaining why the food was not considered to be kosher. And it had, and it was, it just meant that in terms of, it was a thing having to do with health that it boils down to. That's, you know, as I try to explain to people. I'm also, by the way, I'm sure you must have heard of EST, right? From years ago?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
I'm one of those.
Uh-huh.
I took that.
So you were at Esalen there?
I took that, well, I took it in New York City here.
Ah.
I took it in New York City. It was like 1973 or 1974 that I took this thing. I thought, everybody take it. Have a good time.
Uh-huh.
And I get like, it's kind of like, you know, when I hear about Buddhism, there's a little bit of that. There's certain things in that. You know, that, you really need to let things just be the way they are and the way they're not, you know, sometimes.
Uh-huh.
But,
yeah.
I definitely, like, recommend for people who are coming out to California, that area, to stop by and, you know, take a look around, spend a little time there and, you know, kind of get a sense of everything. If you don't want to go on a retreat, but just kind of enjoy.
Yeah, it's kind of like going to a different
country. Yes, that's what I said. I said, it's funny that you said that because, like, I'm walking around and nobody's speaking in English. And I'm going, and I said to my friends, oh, I'm just like Maple Leaf, we're walking around another country, that's all. and just kind of enjoy the energy. That's what that's what it was really about. It's a different energy.
It is, yeah. Very special.
Yes, definitely. I so appreciate your calling in. I may wind up getting back to you sometime when I get to writing the article itself. But
okay,
And this, I would want to kind of get into talk with you about how you see, you know, in terms of going from Judaism to Buddhism, but you're not really. I mean, you are and you're not. I mean, it's not like you're making believe that.
You don't have to give up being Jewish.
You're not giving up anything.
No.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Expect a call from me sometime, Terry.
Okay. Well, it was nice to meet you and talk to you.
And as I said, I appreciate you talking about this and for everybody going out to that area. Yeah.
Okay.
Take a deep breath and go.
Okay.
Yeah. All right. Have a good evening. Thank
you. Okay, you too.
Bye-bye. Bye. I wouldn't mind spending like a weekend there. No, maybe a week. I don't know about the sitting and walking around, though. I think that might be a problem for me. Now, I'm going to get to, you know, I didn't play my wonderful, the commercial yet. So, and you know that I have to do that first. And now, as soon as I can find it on here, where are we? I have so many things on here. Okay. I will find it. Here we are. And wait a minute. What? Okay. Esther and Eunice. Okay. That was Esther. Eunice. How about you, Eunice? Thank you very much. Okay. And now we'll go to my favorite commercial. And then we're going to talk about going green at a hotel, motel.
What would you do to earn brownie points? How about treating someone to what may be the best brownies they've ever tasted? Fairy Tale Brownies. They may seem like one of the richest bars of fudge, with varieties that include caramel, chocolate chip, espresso nib, raspberry swirl, mint chocolate, all made with Calbo dark Belgian chocolate. But yes, they are brownies, and that's no fairy tale.
And you can get these absolutely delicious. I'm already drooling about them, these brownies, at www.brownies.com. I really have to call them up. I need them, and they don't sell them in the stores unless you're out in, like, the Phoenix area. So now that we, as I was talking about going green, I believe, do I have Rakesh? Are you there?
Hello?
Yes.
No, you don't.
Oh, who do I have?
This is Diane from Safari West.
Oh, did I change you? Okay, right, that's right. I switched you.
Yes,
to that
you did.
Okay, let's get to this. So this has nothing to do with a Super 8 motel.
Absolutely
people don't think
nothing.
I'm out of my mind.
No, we are quite the polar opposite of Super 8.
yeah. But it was a super time, though.
Yes, it was.
Well, I want you to explain what the place is. This is Safari West, and this is not like a safari park. You know, it's not like you take your car and drive around and the animals come over to you kind of thing. It's a kind of, what we'd say is a sort of cross between a zoo and a game drive. How's that?
That sounds
okay.
Good.
All right. So you explain. Tell us about, describe the place, and tell us about all the animals that you got.
Yeah, we are about an hour above San Francisco. There are 400 acres here, and we have over 600 animals and about 85 different species. And you can go out on a drive, and the tour itself takes about 3 hours. You're on the Jeep for a couple of hours, then we walk you through an aviary with the birds and little antelopes, and we have monkeys and flamingos and cheetahs. And it's a really nice day, and if you have the time and budget, you can spend the night here. We have really nice tent cabins from South Africa, hardwood floors, no TVs, and your cell phone doesn't work here, which is a plus for most people.
The cell phones don't work?
No, we are in one of those holes where cell phones don't work, and the owner has decided we want to stay that way. It makes it a really nice atmosphere here.
So you can't call up and go, oh, guess what? I just finished seeing I can't hear you.
Exactly.
Yeah. So, tell us, so the first part when you go, the first part of the tour.
Mm-hmm.
Tell us what you get to see.
If you do the driving portion first, there are giraffes. We have about 15 different giraffes, and one was born here a couple weeks ago. You also see flamingos. Also have a couple different kinds of flamingos, and you're going to see all kinds of antelopes. We have Nyala and all kinds of Dama gazelles and things like that. And as you go into the hills, we've got rhinos and Cape Buffalo and zebra, nice herd of zebra. So lots of things in the hills as you go, and it's really nice. It's a nice drive.
Now, when you go on the drives, just so people understand, every area has a gate.
Yes. We have several.
So you can't go wandering anywhere.
No, you cannot. And Watusis and the biggest enclosure up on the hill is 100 acres. So yeah, you have to be with a guide and in the truck. It's for your safety.
Right. Now, In terms of the variety of animals, are they, where are they kind of from? Where do you get them from?
Anyway. Well, we get all of them pretty much. We are AZA accredited, the Association of Zoos and Aquariums of America. And you have to be accredited every 5 years. And we buy, sell, and trade with other zoos and other people that have the permits to do this. So that's
and
you
also
get them from,
like when you're getting an animal, is there a particular reason how it would be chosen?
We ask for permits for all kinds of things in case something comes up that we can get. Like a couple of years ago, our rhino had passed away, and the I think it was the Florida Zoo put up their two rhinos that we could come get them. So we drove two full-grown rhinos across the United States.
Wow.
Yeah. We have a gentleman that can move pretty much any animal.
Yeah.
So.
Is breeding like one of the purposes of...
We are into conservation and education. Our giraffe population runs very well. We have giraffes born here year round, and we sell them off to other zoos and other places. Yeah, giraffes we do really well with.
Mhm. Are any of the animals? What's the word? Not extinct.
Endangered. Yeah, some of the animals are endangered that are here.
For instance,
cheetahs. I don't know if you're cheetahs are. There's about 8,000 left on the planet, so cheetahs are heading toward the endangered list. Our white rhinos also, I'm pretty sure, on the endangered list, and we have some other antelopes and things that are on the endangered list. So yeah, we do have a few things
and actually,
that are.
Just throwing that the white rhinos are not really white.
No, they're not.
But it was originally spelled W. I believe it was spelled W-E-I-T.
Right. It was a language thing. It was the way they pronounced it versus a color. It's not really about what color they are.
Right. Yeah. And so you'll try to get endangered ones just so you can, you know, keep up the species.
Yeah, some of them, and then some things like this past year. So we've pulled in three different kinds of monkeys, which we've never had monkeys here before. And we have Pattis monkeys. They just had a baby last week, and we have Dabraza monkeys, and so we have all. You know, they just keep getting different things in, which is it's kind of fun.
Oh sure, and the part of the walking part of the tour. What is that? What do you get to see?
Well, you get to walk down. We have a large aviary that has a lot of birds in it. We have scarlet ibis and all kinds of birds from all over the world. And there's also blue duiker antelopes. One of the smallest antelopes in the world are in there. And then you get to go and see our cheetahs, which we have four. We have three females and a male trying to start a breeding program here. It's not going very well, but we're trying. And also the monkeys and the fennec foxes and porcupines and the flamingos. All the flamingos that are on the walking portion, we got them from Tanzania. There's about 70 of them. We have another 70 coming in another month. So we're building a whole new section for them. So we'll have lots of flamingos.
So, and it's not uncommon if you're in the aviary that some nice big bird just decides to take the tour with you.
Yeah, the big, tall, is it the Damasal cranes and other birds like that are just, yeah, they like to walk along with you as you take the tour.
But you can't, and needless to say, you can't pet any of the animals,
even if they
want to touch you.
Yeah, they can touch you, you just can't touch them. It's kind of a rule here, so it's a good rule.
Yeah, kind of tease, though.
Well, kind of.
In a way. Yeah. I wonder if they know it.
They do. I do have one giraffe that's fairly human imprinted, and he just loves people. He loves to chew hair and hats. So if you get close enough, he will pull the hat right off your head. So, yeah. Very friendly. His name's Bulldozer.
Uh-huh. Now, you're responsible, not you particularly, you're responsible for feeding all the animals. And so are they... Do they get a sense, so they've gotten a sense of, like, their humans are feeding us?
I think so. I think a lot of them, yeah, because we do feed a fairly regular schedule for all the animals here. And it takes, a lot of, manpower to get around to feeding everything on 400 acres. So, yeah, I'm pretty sure they figured it out.
Now, when let's say when you feed them and you go into a particular area, I guess, like, do you, are there particular places that the food is put down versus, oh, here comes the animals, I'm just going to throw the food out and run?
Yeah, on the feed trucks and with the hoofed animals, yeah, they take it out and put it in pretty much the same place all the time. And then the animals, like the monkeys and the birds and stuff, they have specific, you know, plates and things. They put those also down the same place every day. So they know. Yeah, the water has to be changed, you know, 2 or 3 times a day. And, yeah, try to keep everybody happy.
Anyway, so in other words, like the animals that are, I forgot what they were. They were in Buffalo. What were they called?
Those are Cape Buffalo.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, we have Cape Buffalo.
Yeah, those little nasty-looking ones.
Yeah, those, yeah.
Yeah. That's more like like put it on a 100-foot pole and put it out there.
Yeah, they don't. Yeah, those
yeah.
are not things you can get close to.
Do you have things like set up like maybe like a some kind of barn or something that's their feeding area? In other words, they know to, let's say, walk over to the barn and then the food is there.
The giraffes go into a barn at night, so the giraffes know that there's going to be some food there for them. Also, out on the property, there's bomas, so they're big built buildings that, like the zebras and things, they know that there's going to be food there. So, yeah, there are specific places so that they know where to go.
Oh, that's good. Has any animals ever gotten loose?
Yes, we had a baby springbok the other day that decided he didn't want to be in his pen and was all over. and those things jump. They're like impalas. They can really spring. So, yeah, he was running all over.
That was really cute. Yeah. but nothing like that's going to, you know, you got to run like hell and get the hell up.
No, nothing big has gotten out yet.
Oh, okay. So that was the springbok? Is that what?
Yeah,
the
little baby springbok. Yeah, very cute little.
That was kind of adorable.
Yes.
I have to say. So how long, like when you're doing the tour, how long is the tour?
The tour is about 3 hours long with both portions. Yeah, the walking and being in the Jeep. So yeah, it's a good 3 hours.
Now, in terms of the Jeep, is there an advantage of any place that you sit in the Jeep?
Well, there are, you know, there's a really nice seat over the driver. There's a bench seat up there, and they can fit up to 4 people. It's a nice place to be, and then you take turns sitting up there. And it's a nice vantage point to see the animals, especially when the giraffes kind of come up. Giraffes are kind of like dogs. They're very curious. They'll come right up to the Jeep and see what's going on, see who's in there, and see, you know, there's food.
Oh, okay. But you're not supposed to bring food with you.
No,
like,
you can bring water on, yeah. You can bring water on the tours, but not food.
Okay. Don't expect to feed any of them.
No. Well, we do have a behind-the-scenes program that you can sign up for, that you do get to feed the giraffes in the barn and things like that, and you're going to spots that the general public doesn't get to go. But, yeah, the behind-the-scenes tour, you do get to feed and see animals.
Oh, okay. So you do have something
Yeah, we
like
do.
That.
It's early in the morning or late in the afternoon once the giraffes go to bed. So it's about 7:30 in the morning or about 5 o'clock at night that we do those.
Do you find, let's say, maybe the people that, like, stay over, like, go for that in particular?
We do. We do that. We also have, you can get your picture with a cheetah. So we do that early in the morning, too, because the two sisters that were raised here, the two cheetahs, Tula and Gajima, were 6 weeks old when we got them, and they're, like, 9. And so we can leash them up and bring them out for photos. And then when you get your photo, we Photoshop out the leashes and the keeper so it looks like a cheetah's just sitting next to you.
Oh, okay. Oh, so you don't really get to sit next to them.
Well, you're standing there, but they are leashed up. Yeah, there's
right.
They're leashed
up. Okay.
Yeah.
Don't pet the cheetah.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. That would have been my problem of, like, not being able to pet the animals. And I
had
to remember, like, while I was there, can't touch them, can't pet them. You know, I mean, that's because that much my instinct to go, oh, how cute, you know, and didn't want to pet the thing.
Right.
But I went, oh, you can't do it, you know. You know, still the best thing I've done so far is holding a 3-month-old lion cub in my arms. That
sounds fun.
That's nothing's going to top that.
Well, I've seen giraffes being born. That's pretty special. Yeah, I've seen about 4 giraffes born here on property, so that was pretty neat.
And now, What is, like, in terms, how did you get involved, or what's your background in this?
I'm not on the animal side. I am the event manager here at Safari West,
mm-hmm.
and I was in radio promotions and all different things throughout the years, so it's been a really good fit for me to be here. I have weddings here, birthdays, corporate, you name it, we pretty much do it here, so. Bar mitzvahs were big for a while. A year before last, I had about 4 big ones here, and that was really fun.
I have to picture bar mitzvah. I just have to.
It was an interesting place to have it, but yeah, they really had a good time.
Oh yeah, because I did see that area where the, where you can have an event. Like I guess, and if you, I believe it was if you like stay over, that's where you have dinner also.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we have a really nice indoor space. Yeah, the elephant room is a really neat space. Or we put tables out on the lawn next to the big aviary there. That's
mm-hmm.
a nice place, too.
And you don't eat anything that's been born there?
No, we don't eat our collection, no.
Yeah.
We had somebody that wanted to do that for a fundraiser for an African village, and I said, no, let's just not. They wanted to be able to serve zebra, and she goes, it doesn't taste bad. I go, that's not the point.
Yeah, I wouldn't want to. Yeah, I know. it's hard enough, like, when you're on a farm and you go, oh, I'll have chicken for dinner. Isn't that the one I just saw down the road the other day? that kind of thing. But, it's really, what made you get into this anyway, to go there?
Event planning I've done, like I said, I was in radio for a long time and did different things. So it was a really great place to be. It's a really great place to have, gatherings, both personal and professional places. It's just really neat. It's a neat place to. It's a nice backdrop.
Do you have any any favorite anecdotes or anything, or any odd things that have happened there?
Oh well, besides people trying to, one Thanksgiving, a gentleman that tried to ride a giraffe. Other than that, not really. He was up on
really
the fence.
Did?
Yeah, he was up there trying to get on the giraffe, and I was kind of like, no, that can't really happen. And we do not allow animals here, and I've had people, dogs, little dogs in here, and I thought, okay, they get anywhere near the cheetah pen, they're going to be lunch. So we do not allow pets on our property.
Oh, okay. That's a good thing, yeah.
But I did have, if you go and look on our website at SafariWest.com, I had one of the weddings, a bride in her dress climbed to the top of the Jeep. I mean, she climbed all the way up on top of the Jeep. I was really impressed with that.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. In a full-length, long train gown. Yeah.
Now, when someone's having, a wedding, I mean, other than the room that you're, the event room,
mm-hmm.
where do people tend to want to kind of be?
Well,
having the wedding there?
Yeah, the ceremony is in between the tours. The ceremony is down under the big, large oak tree on the aviary lawn. And so
mm-hmm.
we do the ceremony there, and then we move into the elephant room for the reception. So.
Okay. Have people, told you why they want it there in particular? I'm just curious.
There's a lot of people. I've had people I had one couple from South Africa that missed home. I've had people that, they love animals or they just want something different, something a little more relaxing, not so tense. It's a really nice, lovely, atmosphere to be here. There's people
mm-hmm.
just want something different.
As opposed to a zoo, I mean.
Right. Or, destination weddings are pretty big now. So, to come here and the first thing you do after the ceremony is I take you over the giraffe, you get your picture with giraffes, and that doesn't happen everywhere. So.
Yeah.
Makes it very special.
I'm just picturing some, 6'8" tall guy there near a giraffe and thinking he's short now.
Yep.
What is it cost to do this, by the way?
To come and do just the Jeep tour, it is $68 for adults, and that's anybody
mm-hmm.
over the age of 13. Kids are $30. And
mm-hmm.
we do go out 7 days a week, 5 times a day.
So that when you say that the 68, that's both the Jeep and the walking part of it.
Yes,
well,
it's
right?
The whole 3-hour tour. Yes.
Mhm. And by the way, if somebody wants to have lunch or something. Is that available, or is it
Yeah,
not?
We serve a really nice barbecue buffet lunch and dinner,
uh-huh.
But everything on property is by reservation. So if you come and do a tour, hopefully
right.
you've made reservations to eat, because when people get off the Jeeps and smell, you know, the barbecue, they're like, oh, this is wonderful. So, yeah, it's really nice to be able to do that, to sit out and have lunch, and because you can see the giraffes from the patio and the exotic birds, and so it's a very nice place.
Cool, really cool. So, and how long have you said you've been there? I don't remember.
I've been here for 5 years.
5 years.
And we've been open to the public for 18 years.
Wow.
Yeah, Peter Lang,
yeah.
the owner, his dad, they lived in Hollywood. His dad produced Doctari and Sea Hunt and Flipper, and that's how I got into the whole animal thing. That's how it all started. Because he grew up with lion cubs. So.
That's cool. But I understand, I heard that when it first opened, no one was there.
Yeah, we opened the 4th of July weekend in 1993, and no one came. Not a single person. So, yeah, we had to work on that a little bit, get a little more advertising going so people would know to come. So there's a nice show out here, Bay Area Backroads, and he's the one that put us on the map and let people know we were here.
Oh, that's a good thing.
Yeah,
but
it's a very good thing.
Yeah, it's quite a different thing to do. You know, as I said, it's not you bring your own car and drive around. And it's,
yeah, you're with a guide that it takes our guides like 2 months to learn all the animals, so... It's quite, yeah, they're very knowledgeable about everything that's here.
Great. That's absolutely fabulous. So you think you're going to hang there for, you know, at least a couple
yeah.
more years?
Oh, sure. I'm sure of it.
Yeah, you must enjoy the other than whatever dealing with, like, I guess, kids or, you know, odd things, being in an atmosphere of a whole bunch of wild animals.
Yeah, well, like currently, like today, I have a group. Well, they used to be called Elder Hostel. Now it's Road Scholar, and it's grandparents and grandchildren. It's a 3-day program, and the kids are 7 to 12, and they have they're doing African dance lessons here in about another hour after dinner. So they have it's a wonderful program. We do it about 4 times a year here.
Oh, so you have various programs there.
Oh, we have all kinds of different. Yeah, that's like I said, through Road Scholar, they come out 4 times a year. It's people from all over the United States, and it's really
neat.
And
you got a website?
Yes,
yeah,
SafariWest.com.
That's easy enough to remember, huh?
Mm-hmm.
And just to give an idea, are you located considered in the city of Santa Rosa?
Yeah, we're right outside the city. Yes.
Okay. And it's about, like, if you want to say, from downtown Santa Rosa.
It's about 10, 15 minutes.
Okay, just so people can kind of, you know, get an idea of that. Yep.
Yeah, we're about an hour north of San Francisco.
Oh, that's pretty cool.
Yeah.
I think that's kind of great. It's a, you know, kind of different thing to do. And, Robbie, I don't know whether this week or next week, to just give an idea of a kind of difference, I'm going to be talking about the B. Bryan Preserve.
Oh, very nice.
Which is not the same at all.
No, it's totally different, actually.
Completely different experience. As a matter of fact, I forgot to ask him what had happened. Is like he says, oh, just, you know, you could walk around anywhere you want, just like you go into the gate and you got to close the gate behind. And I was kind of wondering, like, well, there's other gates. I mean, I don't expect you could walk in and, you know, into the field of where the animals are. You know, I think I have to ask them. I think hopefully, you know, those are closed off and you don't get there. You know, you got fences or whatever in between. Anyway. but that's pretty cool because if I want to say kind of the difference of this than let's say when I went to South Africa is when you go to South Africa, you go on game tours, those animals, they're there. They're not, you know, you don't go out and feed them. No one's going to have to feed them. No one. They're all on their own to get their own food.
Yes, they
that's
are.
The difference. So with this kind of a thing, you know, they're not going to, like, seek you because they're hungry. They're getting fed, at least.
Yes, they are very happy here.
Yeah. Well, I appreciate you calling in and telling us about this, and of course I'll be writing about that. So if I have any questions left, if I don't have all of the photos that I already took, like, I may go, and what was that animal? And call you, you know.
Yes, we have 90 species. It does get a little daunting. Yeah, like I said, I'm in events, so it's hard for me to even say, what is that?
that's kind of the difference, as opposed to when the Bee Prime Preserve doesn't have a variety of species.
Right.
As opposed to this, and there's lots of different type of animals. So you need to bring your camera and write down.
Oh, yes, camera, binoculars, all that good stuff.
Yeah, and have a ball.
Yes.
Okay. All right, Diane, thank you so much for calling in. I'll have to rearrange my little thing here to say that you were second on the list there. I had to make some changes. I'm glad that you said that today would be better than tomorrow. I went, oh, good, that's fine. I'll get you in now.
Okay, great.
Okay,
have a great evening.
And say hello to the animals for me.
I will.
Okay.
All right.
Bye.
Bye.
Oh, yes. Yep, they were there, too. Yeah, Esther and Eunice were there. So that's kind of cool. And and now we have, let's see. So now I believe we're now going to talk. Now, Rakesh, do I have you on the air now?
Yes, I'm on the air.
Oh, good.
Right now.
How are you? Now we'll talk about the Super 8 Motel. So Rakesh, first I want to comment that the Super 8 Motel is in Ukiah, and it's not like Motel 6.
No.
It's no longer your Motel 6, and it's not your common Super 8 either. So Rakesh, tell us what you did to this place.
Well, I'm a economy budget chain. I'm a part of Wyndham Hotel Group, the Wyndham Hotel Group, who has about 7,200 hotel and portfolio worldwide, from Wyndham Resort to all the way to Days Inn and a couple other brands. And our Super 8 is one of the Wyndham's brand. We are about 2,200 hotels in Northern America, including China and in Canada. I'm a 54-unit hotel. About 2 hours north of San Francisco, in a beautiful county called Mendocino County. Town name is Ukiah. And I'm the only hotel in Ukiah which is certified green hotel. And it's certified by third party, which is called Green Irene. I'm certified by AAA. AAA have affiliation with the Green Business Bureau. They send out the independent representative, a QA inspector, to come out to the hotel and check all the things that the hotel claim as they are green, and then they give the certification. So we achieved, they have different level, and we achieved the platinum certification from Green Business Bureau. Also, we are affiliated, I'm a member of Green Hotel Association. I stay green. I have a three-leaf rating, as well as I'm also a member with the Sustainable Travel International. They also do the certification for the Green Hotel. So this is all the about the verifying that we are doing all the practice genuinely at the hotel by claiming as a green or eco-friendly or sustainable hotel.
Okay, so first what I want to do is get into what you did in terms of the exterior of the hotel.
Exterior of the hotel, what I did is I took over this hotel in 2005. It was a really run-down hotel. It used to be nice. This hotel built in 1981. So it was quite old hotel and pretty much run down from inside and outside. When we took over, business also wasn't really great. It was just, but there was a lot of potential. So when I looked at this hotel and I see a lot of opportunity, and we decided to remodel the whole hotel's exterior and interior. So, but then I wanted to save money, so I don't want to spend a whole bunch of money by doing, because it was an old hotel, and it's a small town. So I made couple of changes in the interior and exterior. We did the foam stucco. It's a little bit different than the traditional stucco. A little bit expensive, but it's a good insulation to the building and doesn't put a lot of weight on the building and give you a really good facelift. And by doing that, it will really affect the hotel's interior heating and cooling system, which is a small HVAC unit we have in individual room, controlled by the individual room, in individual room. Also, we changed all the windows to it's called low E window, which is Energy Star certified, and utility, our utility company, actually they give the rebate. Also, that's the exterior part which made the changes in beginning. And then after that, recently we did an exterior, we changed all the exterior lighting from metal highlight light to, it's called induction lighting. And from, it's about, I had about 1,775 watt metal highlight lamps. We converted into only 40 watt induction lighting. And if you go online and if you type that word induction lighting, you will see it's a huge difference. And in fact, you will save a lot of electricity, and our utility company give the rebate. So all the lighting what I changed outside, 60% of the money utility company paid, which is City of Ukiah, I buy the electricity from. Plus, I'm saving almost 1 month of a bill for the whole year. So every year I'll be saving one. So whatever I spend, I spend money, will be paid off in within 14 to 16 months.
Right.
So that's the exterior changes I have made.
Yeah. And now, and you said that the, that you just have one particular, you have two, it's like two buildings, is that what it was?
Yes, in my premises we have three different buildings. One is a restaurant, which I don't own it. It's someone else owns it. It's called Henny Penny Family Diner. And then
right.
I have two different buildings. First building is the office building. Has 18 rooms. From 18, two of them, which I converted into my apartment for personal use. And then, so 16-room rentable. And then next building, I have 38 rooms. Now, interior of the room also, we changed everything. Took out the old carpet and put the brand new carpet. And then inside
the
furniture.
Did you use the carpeting, some different type of carpeting?
You know,
that
time when I was doing it 5 years ago, didn't have that much of options, but tried to find the cheapest option or the closest option of recycling, but it wasn't making sense that time. It was 5 years ago. Now from last 2 years, there are so many products coming out as a recycle, or they're made out of recycled material, or ozone-friendly or eco-friendly or whatever they call it. But that time, I didn't have enough that many choices, so I had to go with the regular carpet. But
mm-hmm.
in the furniture, also paint also, that time it wasn't regular paint was available. It wasn't the other kind of paint wasn't available, so I had to use the regular paint. But the furniture, what I've done is I don't want to throw away my old furniture, so I found the local hotels in my town, and then a couple of them in village, and I sold them my furniture, so I don't want to waste it. And then rest of the bedspread and blankets and the mattresses, mattress pad, everything what I had, I donated to Red Cross, Salvation Army, and also called the local social activities and ask them to come and pick it up. So there are many people from small nearby town. They came and pick up those mattresses. And then there's another thing about all the bigger hotel, like high-end hotel. They change their furniture every 5 years. So I was looking for not too far from nearby five-star hotel or high-end hotel who was getting rid of their furniture and still in a good condition. So I found one hotel in Bay Area. It was a Westin hotel, and they were selling their furniture. And I paid only like about $150 or something. And I took all that, I bring that furniture in my hotel. I refurbished the whole furniture by myself with my maintenance guy, and I took the help of a couple other people and refurbished the whole hotel interior. So I did not waste anything, not buying or not by getting rid of anything. So that's also part of protecting the environment and going green.
And of course, you check for bed bugs.
Oh yes, it's San Francisco. So San Francisco as a metropolitan city has a big problem. Our small town doesn't have much problem with the bed bugs yet. And then luckily, touch wood, I never had any problem with the bed bugs. So don't know. Yeah. So.
Good. I'm glad to hear that. And I understand that you're also going to be looking for doing solar paneling?
So that was after doing all the remodeling interior and exterior. I'm still continuously doing something to going green. I'm doing almost done with my landscaping sprinkler system, replaced the whole sprinkler system with the drip system, so I save a lot of water. And then the next project I'm doing, which is I'm working on it from last 3 years, to doing the solar PV system for the hotel to offset my electricity bill and offset my carbon footprint. Also wanted to do the solar water heating system for my guest room to heat up the hot water, and also reduce my gas bill and also reduce my carbon footprint. But the thing was, it's still, the technology is, there are a lot of technology available, there are a lot of incentive available, but up till now it wasn't making a financial sense because it costs really a lot of money, and the return on investment is almost 8 to 10 years, and in some of the cases is more than 12 years. But I've worked out something, found out from utility companies that they do 0% finance, on-bill finance, which is also a utility company give the rebates, as well as the state, and also there's a federal grant on leave of tax credit, which I didn't know in the beginning when I was searching for all those options. And finally, I found some really good options to find the incentives. So now I'm... within a few months, I want to do solar PV system for the electricity and solar water heating system. And it probably won't offset all the usage, what I do, but maybe 12, 15, or 20%, or I don't know how much right now it will make a finances, but that's what I'm doing next.
And I also wanted to share that in the rooms and also the area that you have, the continental breakfast, there are recycle bins.
Recycle bins. Yes, that's also part of going green. My green team is my housekeeping. My all my housekeepers, by myself, with all the people who work around here, we train them when we hire them and continuously train them when they are working how to reduce the solid waste and do the recycling. Now, my solid waste, my waste management company. And in all the town, everywhere in our country, there is the waste management company offers free recycle pickup. So if I found out by doing this practice, by training the housekeeper, that my scavenger bill, my garbage bill is now 60% less. My garbage is 60% less than what I used to pick up a year ago by just training the housekeeper. It is a huge difference. Yes, it is. It is a huge difference. The plus is that you are helping to protect the environment and reducing your carbon footprint, because you're protecting those plastic bags, preventing from going into the landfill, which is damaging our ozone layer and, you know, all the problems with the environment. So I trained my housekeeper to go all the rooms we installed. There's a two trash can. One is regular, one is a blue bin, and it has a clearly marked recycle only, paper, plastic, and tin. And then in the hotel, on all the corners, everywhere where there is a trash can, we put the another blue bin with the clearly marking that recycle only, and we collect we try to point out to the guests that please put your recycle in here. And then when my housekeeping staff the clinic crews, when they go, and the maintenance person, they go to the hotel in the guest room when they do the cleaning. First thing first, they go and they separate the trash from the solid waste to the recycle. Whatever they recycle, they collect it separately. They
right.
put it separately on the housekeeping cart, and then they're done with the cleaning of the room. They put it into a recycle bin, and then my waste management company offers a free pickup twice a week. Or sometimes they come 3 times a week to pick up the recycling, which is all free.
Oh, cool. And by the way, just to kind of to share, what's there to do in downtown Ukiah anyway? Is there anything there?
Yeah, we are. This is also the about the green is the Mendocino County is the one of the greenest wine country in the United States. Many people didn't know before. Now they are. We are getting together and we are marketing all the lodging association. There's a Mendocino County Lodging Association, also Grape and Wine Commission, Art Council, and many other organizations getting together. And we formed called VMC, called Visit Mendocino County, and we're promoting our county. We have 84 different wineries. A couple of them are truly green, certified green wineries, including Parducci, and there are a couple other wineries. So the wine tasting and wine is the main attraction in our area. Plus, Ukiah is the it's a small town, but it's a very beautiful town. The Ukiah name came out from the Native American word called Yokoyo, means deep valley. So we are in the valley, and there are lots of redwood trees. There's a lake. There's two casinos nearby, and it's a beautiful sightseeing place.
Oh, cool. That's great. Yeah, I was, unfortunately, I went in on a Sunday.
Yeah. Well,
I didn't realize it was Sunday. And we're walking around going, there's nothing open. Why aren't things open? And then all of a sudden it is, oh, it's Sunday.
Right. But usually on Sunday, well, unfortunately, you know, this it's a global warming affecting the weather. And from last few months we were just having rain continuously and really terrible weather, but now it's beautiful weather. Now we have every Sunday we have some function in town, like Sunday in the Park from the City of Ukiah. So they do feature film every Sunday. There's some picnic, there's some festivals, wine tasting events. So there are a lot to do here in this small town, and it's not too far from San Francisco. So if you're coming to San Francisco, it's only about 1 hour 45 minutes from San Francisco, or about 2 hours from Sacramento. So if you're visiting one of these big cities, just make a trip to our small town and visit a couple of wineries, visit the lake. We have a lot of hiking trail, actually. They are beautiful. If you like hiking, then it's a really, really beautiful, very nice. And it's the whole county is so beautiful. If you go inland to the coast, if you drive, it's a beautiful drive over there at the Mendocino County.
So are you saying, I mean, then if you're coming out there, did you say that it's closer to coming into San Francisco than it would be into Sacramento?
Yes, from San Francisco, it's around about 115 to 120 miles, I would say, from San Francisco.
Okay.
Depending where you're staying in San Francisco. And from Sacramento, you would take Highway I-5 to Highway 20 to come to our county to visit Ukiah,
right.
Possibly about 2 hours, so a little over 2 hours, but not too far.
Right.
It's a beautiful drive. And so if you are here in this area, you just make a trip to our area and spend some time. It's beautiful out here, and it's nice, fresh, clean air, and then small town. And it's really inexpensive vacation probably compared to you go to a bigger town like a San Francisco. So please consider to come to Ukiah and come and stay with our hotel called Super 8, the only green hotel in Ukiah.
And you got a website?
Yes, we have a website. Our website is super8ukiah.com. So it's S-U-P-E-R, number 8, U-K-I-A-H.com. It's super8ukiah.com. And we are also on Facebook and the Twitter, so please visit our Facebook page. It's facebook.com/super8ukiah. And also, I forgot to mention, if you're traveling from nearby destination, We just recently installed the electric vehicle charging station, and we are offering free charging to all our registered guests. So it's a free trip anyway. So if you come to our town, stay at my hotel, charge your vehicle, and it's free. So if you have a hybrid plug-in vehicle or electrical vehicle, so it's free charging we offer right now. And we are one of the first and the only hotel in our county to do it. And now there are other hotels started doing it. And recently, this morning, I received a call from Santa Rosa Water Authority. They're thinking to install a couple of charging stations in Santa Rosa. And they were referred by the company I purchased the electrical vehicle charging station called Aero Environment. So this is something to know.
Great. That's really great. Well, I appreciate you calling in and telling us about the place. I know I liked it. We all
liked
it.
Thank you so much. Thanks for visiting.
Even my chickens liked it, too.
Well, next time when you come, make sure you check your calendar and it's not Sunday.
Yeah, okay.
And then we have couple of really great festivals. It's a wine festival, Crab and
mm-hmm.
Wine Festival. So if you look online, if you go on visit Mendocino.com, there are a lot of festivals year around we have. And try to make a plan to come to visit. There's a Hopland Passport event. It's really good. There are a couple of wineries get together and they have a wine tasting event. And it's really fairly inexpensive, like $35 for 2 day wine tasting, food, music, and then if you pick our hotel, we have packages for all those festivals, and includes the room and all the event tickets. So please check our website. It's superedukaya.com, and then also can go to visitmendocino.com and find out which of festival you like. It's a wine tasting festival, Crab and Wine Festival. There are a lot of other festivals we have.
Okay. That's fabulous. I thank you for telling us about this, and this is such a great idea, and I'm sure in terms of cost, it's competitive.
Very competitive, yes. It is very
yeah.
competitive, and compared to you go to other destinations, it's very, very inexpensive. Plus, as I mentioned, it's very close to San Francisco, so many people, they like to come to San Francisco and just add a little bit more money to your budget and try to make a plan to come to visit Ukiah and stay
okay.
with us and explore our county, explore our wine country.
Well, it's also that not that far from the city of 10,000 Buddhas.
Yes, yeah, it is beautiful.
So if you're going to go up there and you don't want to stay over there, just stay over at the Super 8.
Super 8, thank you.
Yeah. Okay.
All right,
thanks. Thanks again.
Thanks.
Have a good evening.
You too. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Yeah, it's a Super 8. That's also pretty cool. I like the place. Yeah, I liked it going to green hotels. Yeah, okay. And let's see. So we went to eat at a place called Branches Wood Fire Chop House, and I was getting some descriptions of what we ate. So and Brett, I don't have his name. Brett was the our waiter, and I'm gonna have him describe. We had this wonderful mushroom soup that he'll...
This here is our soup du jour today. It's a mini cream of mushroom soup topped off with a little bit of parsley.
Okay, how is it? Do you know how it's prepared?
Actually, they do not let me in the kitchen on this one. You're going to have to ask Joe on that. I know it is made with a chicken stock, and it wouldn't be vegetarian, so it's just the mini mushrooms, the cream. Besides that, I'm not going to lie to you.
Okay.
I am not a chef by any means. I let them worry about that.
Okay, that's fine.
Okay.
Yeah, so that was Brett trying his best to describe the cream of mushroom soup that we had. It was really, really good. It definitely wasn't like full of cream. It was, and when you use... It's interesting. When you use button mushrooms, regular kind of mushrooms, it's not as tasty when you use, like, crimini or shiitake. you know, kind of mushrooms. But then we also had, and the other thing next, well, not the next thing. I mean, we had a whole, did a tasting. But here's a description. Here's Brett talking about we had mussels and calamari.
All right, I'm going to leave this curry sauce over here. And we have the calamari.
Ready, Garvin.
All right. Okay, so we have here our Prince Edward Island mussels, the cast iron skillet with just a little bit of parsley, normally a tad of salt and pepper, with a little bit of canola oil. What that does is it opens them up. Of course, we put the sake right over the top of them, give it a little bit of extra taste. And we also have the curry sauce, if you prefer. Then we also have our tempura battered calamari, which is done up with our homemade tartar sauce and cocktail sauce with some fresh green beans.
Now the tempura, what do you use? Is it a regular tempura?
It's a regular tempura, and I believe they do add just a touch of a local beer in there.
Oh, okay.
That's one of the chef's secrets, though.
Okay. And we had more, but we did get Chef Joe to come out and describe a main item.
Here we have a petite filet mignon with a Jack Daniel's demi-glace. In the center is a Atlantic salmon grilled and studded with cilantro and ginger, so served over grilled asparagus with a honey soy glaze. On the far end, you have a grilled ribeye steak. And then accompanying all three, you have your choice of horseradish chive butter, cabernet butter, or apple brandy butter.
Great.
You guys enjoy.
Oh, yeah. Thanks.
And that was some entree-wise. And then I believe it was Brett who later came out and described a particular dessert.
So we have Debbie's famous pear and almond tart topped off with some huckleberry ice cream. Enjoy.
Yeah, pear and almond tart. Now, the Branches Wood Fire Chop House has, I guess what you would call, like, what I would say, like two sections. Well, no, this has more than two sections, but one area when you first come in, it's like, you know, when you go into a diner and you see the desserts, well, this is it. You first walk in and the bakery is there. And so I met up with Chris, who's the, I believe he's the owner or co-owner. And, he's the owner. His wife does the baking. So I met up with Chris, and here's the first part of the interview to tell you about the place itself.
Well, first thing I need you to do is introduce yourself to my audience.
Well, hello, everyone. My name is Christopher Conan, and I'm here at Branches Restaurant in Ukiah, California.
Branches? Branches Restaurant?
Branches Restaurant, just like the branches on a tree.
This is quite an interesting place. Well, how did you get the name Branches?
The name Branches actually came from my wife, who's actually the executive pastry chef of the restaurant. She just kind of was looking around the area and saw all the agriculture and the pear trees and had just come up with this concept of branches, and it just kind of stuck.
That's great. I noticed that the restaurant looks like it has, like, different areas to it. Like, there's the dining room area, but then there was a sports bar area.
There's an Irish pub sports bar area that we have, which is attached to the restaurant, where we have 20 flat screen TVs that shows a lot of the sporting events locally and internationally. So we have all kinds of sports for all the sports fans here. We also have a bakery, so there's a bakery attached to the restaurant, and everything that's used in the restaurant, the breads, the pastries, everything is all made fresh in-house. So you can see the display case where we have all the yummy desserts. We also have an in-house butcher and a butcher counter where they have all the meats and everything that you get. You can take home, barbecue them, order sandwiches, order food to go. The main dining room floor, of course, is very beautiful, very picturesque. And on the side of the main dining room, we have what's called a private fireside dining room, which where you can see that lovely fireplace that's glowing over there in the corner. It's very, very nice. And we also do have another fireplace that's actually in the Irish Pub Sports Bar as well.
That's great. That's a, this is a big place.
It's a very big place, yes.
But I guess I saw what looks like the kitchen, but just not an area you can take a walk and say, I think I'll go and watch. Can you go and watch to see while they're cooking?
The kitchen actually is a unique concept. It is an open through kitchen, so you can actually look right into the back kitchen, which is where they do all the prepping, up to the front line. So, yes, actually on the booths, you actually can stand up and you can look right through to the kitchen to the line where they're cooking.
Well, that's, you know, in case you just want to know, well, I wonder how that's cooked.
Exactly. We do have a lot of people that wander up on the side and kind of peek through, and we're more than happy to bring them up and a little bit closer and show them exactly where the food's being made. One of the interesting things about the steakhouse here is that we do have a mesquite grill oven, and that's what really separates the steaks here, is that that oven gets up to 1,800 to 2,300 degrees, and that's really a key element. And most of the finer steakhouses you'll eat in the United States have one of those ovens because it sears the meat, seals all the moisture and the juice in, they pull it off, they let it rest, so the enzymes and fat and everything kind of mix together, which really builds good flavor in the steaks that we cook.
So, in other words, steak is a big thing here.
Steak is a big thing, yes.
Yeah. Now, any particular, like, what are the cuts of steaks that you have here?
Well, we have a signature steak. So we have a 40-ounce bone-in ribeye steak, which is, we call it the Freddie Flintstone steak. It's as big as a brontosaurus burger. We also have the boneless ribeye steak, which is very good, very flavorful. And then we have the other cuts that most steakhouses have. We have the New York, we have the petite filet, we have prime rib. And every now and then we'll actually have some different cuts of meat where we'll do maybe some wild boar. Sometimes we'll do different types of game, things like that, that the special also do on specials once or twice a month.
Well, that's great. But you do have, of course, chicken and fish. And
we do. We have free-range chicken. You can get it half chicken, chicken breast, fried chicken. Everybody loves fried chicken. Chicken piccata. We also have the seafood, which is very bountiful off our Northern California coast. So we do the fresh crab when the crab's available. We bring in the cod when the cod's available. Salmon, sometimes we have difficulty getting wild salmon, just because the fishing season's been very difficult for the fisheries here in Northern California and Alaska. So most of the salmon we're getting in right now is farm-raised.
Is Dungeness crab, are they in season right now?
Dungeness crab is in season, yes, absolutely.
Oh, good. I want to make sure that while I'm
here
in California, that I have that.
You've got to have some Dungeness crab. And unfortunately, we didn't have anybody diving for abalone this week off the coast. Otherwise, we could have had some of that for you as well.
Oh, okay.
Really good.
So now, just tell me about some of the other like specials that you have that on the menu. What are the kind of what's the most popular thing that people come in for?
You know, believe it or not, the steaks are quite popular, but a lot of people like our wok dishes. So we have the chicken curry, which is wok dish. We have the blazing vegetables, which is another wok dish. Chef Munther actually trained professionally with a very famous Asian chef. When Chef Munther used to work in Chicago, he worked for Let Us Entertain You in Chicago and had the opportunity to meet a lot of world-famous chefs, Wolfgang Puck among one of them. So he's basically taking some of those Asian dishes that he learned how to cook and with a little bit of a California twist. And we find those to be very popular. So the chicken curry, the mee goreng, the blazing vegetables, blazing beef, blazing chicken are all really quite popular here because there's no one else really in the area that's doing those type of fresh wok dishes.
Now, Chef, is it Munther?
Chef Munther, M-U-N-T-H-E-R.
Is that his first name? Or
that is his first name.
First name.
Yep.
Okay, what's his last name?
His last name is Masarwe.
Okay.
Yes. M-A-S-S-A-R-W-E-H, Munther Masarwe.
Is this on your website, so in case the people know? Okay.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, and Chef Munther actually has been part of many popular restaurants, and one of the famous Asian restaurants that he and both Chef Debbie, my wife, had was called Tin Pan in San Francisco, and it was very well acclaimed, had many write-ups, and had a huge following. But they had sold that off to some other investors and moved on. They also own Wild Fox Restaurant in Novato. And some of the Munther also works with Squat and Gobble Creperies in San Francisco as well.
Oh, cool.
So we're kind of involved in a lot of different restaurants in the area.
So now Debbie, she does all the desserts? Is that the...
Debbie is the dessert queen. Yeah, she does all the desserts. She does wedding cakes. And you name it, she can do it.
Did she go to school for this?
Yes. She is actually a European-trained pastry chef. She's originally from England. That's where she trained and grew up. And when she was in her early 20s, she moved to the States. Made a quick stop in New York and then ended up in Chicago. And she also worked for Let Us Entertain You, as well as the Pump Room in Chicago, where she was one of the executive pastry chefs in charge of 20 restaurants.
Wow.
Yeah, for the group. So, yeah, she's pretty well known, and she knows what she's doing.
What's some of your favorite things here, as far as the...
as far as the dessert?
Yeah.
Pretty much everything. Yeah, as long as it's got sugar in it, it's great. You know, there's really nothing. I would love to say there's nothing I dislike, but there really isn't. It's all absolutely incredible. You know, from the pastries to the, to the cakes, to the little tarts, to...
Well, why don't we go over to the counter there and, like, take a look at stuff
there?
We need
to go over there and take a look and see if we can pack up some little goodies for you to go.
Okay, and then you can describe some of the things that that I'm about to haul out with
me,
huh?
There's a bevy of morsels to choose from over there, so let's go over there.
Okay, let's do that.
All right, let's go.
Okay, so, yes, now we're going right to the bakery counter. Let's go.
So, I'm looking in the window here. Look at that. I see you have walnut balls.
We do have walnut balls.
Yeah, okay. So, now, as we go down here, I see you have all kinds of things, cakes and pastries and stuff. Tell me some of the things here
Well, on top of the case, you can see we have an assortment of cookies, pretty much any kind of cookie you can imagine. One of my favorites is actually this chocolate sea salt, which is very good. Then we have the macaroons. We have the pear macaroons laced on top of the dressing. We have these little peanut butter cup cookies, thumbprint cookies. We have the salted chocolate peanut brittle here, all kinds of different tarts, berry tarts. And then we have an assortment of truffles down here on this side, which are very, very good.
So you're making your own truffles, too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Chef Debbie makes her own truffles. You can see, we got the walnut balls over there, and then we got coconut balls over here.
You not only have walnut balls, you have the coconut balls, too.
We do. Not
okay.
to be confused with sweaty balls, because those are something completely different.
Okay.
So coconut balls and walnut balls. And then the rest are the truffles.
Okay, and...
is an Italian strawberry roulade cake.
And what is that?
It's basically a white cake, and inside it's kind of it's rolled like a log, and it has So it's Italian pound cake with mascarpone whipped cream and strawberries inside. So it's rolled up.
Wow.
And then they has the cream cheese. Frosting on top, sprinkled with a little bit of chocolate.
Now, is that something you sell as a whole cake, or can people come in and get slices?
Typically, we would sell it as a whole cake, but certainly we can also do slices. They usually do, when they have cakes like that in front, they typically usually have one in the back. So if someone buys the whole cake, they can have a backup one, or they can actually cut it in slices for people that want to take slices home with them.
Okay.
And then you can see we also have the smaller... almost single desserts where you have the coconut cream pie, lime cream pie, chocolate mousse pie. This is a peanut butter cheesecake right there. Raspberry cheesecake, brownies. Yeah, so pretty much hopefully we have something for every little sweet tooth in the house.
And you're also making your own bread, right?
We do. We make our own bread. We have two bakers that come in every night and make the breads. We also have a lot of specialty breads where we have our rustic loaf, our Francese bread, and then you can see on some of the more specialty breads they have up top, like that one on the left is kind of shaped in the form of a pear, where it has a pear stencil on it, which is kind of the signature of the Branch's bakery logo. Chef Debbie loves pears, so she likes to have a lot of different pears up there. And then you can see we have the different baguettes, multigrain loaves, so we do a lot of fresh bread daily.
That's great. Why, thanks a whole bunch. I think everybody's drooling by now.
Hopefully they are drooling, yeah.
Okay.
I'm still looking at this chocolate cake with the Nutella and salted peanut butter cream stuff in there. That looks pretty good to me.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, and you got a website, by the way.
We do. It's www.branchesrestaurant.com.
Okay, cool. Thanks a whole bunch.
Well, thank you, Meryl. Thank you for coming in, and hopefully we can pack up some of these goodies to take with you.
Okay, I'll take them.
All right, let's do it.
Oh, yeah, and I did. Packed up some goodies and took them with me. Now, also, I'm not sure whether we commented on it, but you can actually, well, I guess abutting the bakery area is the area where they have the meats, and so you can, you know, get the raw meat to, you know, to buy just like you're going to a butcher. And get that and bring home and cook it the way you want. So that's there's going to be a lot more restaurants for me to be talking about while we're there. I just want to get at least one of them in. I'm going to do another show tomorrow. I have to look at it and I forgot like who I have listed. But there will be another tomorrow, and I think I probably see if I can throw in another restaurant. I know I'm definitely going to do. We're going to talk about the Lighthouse in Point Arena. That's one of the places, and we're also going to talk about the B. Bryan Preserve. So those are two definites. And I'll definitely have some more for you. So I'm going to end the show a bit early. So everybody have a great day, evening, or however you are. And I'm going to I ain't going to nod out. That's for sure. This on TV, and I think it's about in 15 minutes. To see the season opening of Hot in Cleveland, yes, and also the pilot or the first show of Anne Fran Drescher's back on TV, and I forgot, I think something with divorced or something like that, but that's so I'm gonna. Watch them both and kind of like hang out and chill out over here. So till tomorrow, everybody. Now let's go find this. Yeah, yeah. I think I need a fairy tale brownie. So I gotta kind of. I wanted to pass along something. All right. Now I'll talk about. I went to. I'll tell you tomorrow. I went to. A place and I was dissatisfied and I just called them today and boy, I mean they didn't really care that I was dissatisfied, so I'll let you know where not to go. So until tomorrow, as they say, TTFN.